Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. We have a great show with a wonderful guest who's extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing the topic of multifamily operations, technology, and centralization, what's really happening in 2023. Joining me in the studio is a great multifamily industry consultant and technology guru, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20. Welcome, Dom.
Thanks. It's great to be back. It's very much part of this thing every year to come to Multifamily Matters.
Yeah. I don't know how many years we've been doing this, but every time you come out with your 20 for 20 paper, which is generally in the February, March timeframe, we have you in so you can tell us and our listeners the latest and greatest that's going on out there. And I think we've seen some changes happen. And of course, you were doing a lot of this prior and during the COVID pandemic mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. now post-pandemic. So that in itself probably caused a lot of changes. But let's talk a little bit about, for the benefit of our audience, tell us the term centralization. What does that mean as it relates to multifamily?
Well, you just opened a can of worms right there because it means a different thing depending on who you're talking to. I mean, I guess the working definition that we've used in 20 for 20 is, centralization has to entail taking some role or some activities that are traditionally performed on the property and moving them somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it means instead of having a leasing agent in every property, you share leasing agents between multiple properties. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine the same is true of property admin, like assistant property managers. The same, to a lesser extent, is true of like maintenance. But the things that we generally consider our core property management roles that go on site, there's an increasing trend or an increasing appetite to want to take them off site and leverage technology better so that people can do those roles from a more centralized location.
And I guess centralization, did it first start with like contact centers? Is that where we saw the first of multifamily dipping its toe into that water?
To an extent, but contact centers arrived and didn't really change the way that people staffed mm-hmm. properties. It really sounds like pretty much since the inception of multifamily, there's always been talk of how well this technology or this capability or this service can change the way that we staff properties, right? Because there is this fundamental thing in multifamily where, you know, my biggest expenses are payroll costs, property tax, and increasingly like insurance. So anything that makes a material difference to those is sort of worth pursuing. But it's never quite delivered a different model. Like these capabilities come, they improve stuff about the way that we work, but they still largely leave the operating model unchanged. The thing that's happened more recently is that numerous companies have sort of made headway on just changing their models. Like the public REITs are very public in what they say about having changed the way that they do leasing, for example. And there's a natural compulsion for other companies in the industry to want to do the same thing. The sort of touch point that I think we come up with in this year's survey tells me that the desire to do stuff about this is really strong, but the actual translation of that desire into stuff changing is still quite slow. Like I think probably quite a lot slower than people think it is.
Yeah.
Should I delve a little bit deeper into that?
Yeah, but before we do that, I want to just ask you one question, because some of our listeners, even though you're on the show every year talking about 20 for 20, just give a little background about what goes into creating the white paper that you do for 20 for 20.
Yeah, so the fundamental idea is it's 20 conversations with senior executives. So it's 10 COOs and 10 heads of technology across 20 companies, right? And the companies include you know, some public REITs, some big fee managers, some 5,000 unit owner operators, and kind of a mixture of everything in between. So we put together like this very deliberately assembled like cross section of all the companies in the industry, because as we know in multifamily, 5,000 unit portfolios don't behave the same way as 100,000 unit portfolios, right, and so on. So we want to get the cross section to kind of understand what's driving the trends that we hear about. And then, yeah, just each year we go through and synthesize everything that came out of those conversations and write it up as a publication. The key sort of things that are sort of different and interesting, in my opinion, about the way that this paper is done is, number one, all of the data comes from open-ended conversations. So there's no sort of survey, check this box kind of thing. Like, you have to tell me what you did and tell me why you did it. Like, yeah, that, so you get into intent. The other thing, though, is it's anonymous, right? So although they're people that you will definitely know if you were in the industry, we don't say who they are. And that means you get a completely different answer than you would if you were going to a panel at an industry event or watching a webinar or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, that's basically what 20 for 20 is. To the point about centralization, the sort of biggest takeaway, I think, is that centralization doesn't seem to be the right word for the thing that people are trying to do. Like, we know that the thing that people call centralization, which means using technology to change the way that I deliver services to prospects and residents, like that's more the thing that people are talking about when they talk about centralization. So it doesn't necessarily entail moving any roles anywhere. That activity is absolutely top of mind. And I know this because, you know, when we ask people, what was your biggest highlight from 2022? Most of them, the answer was something to do with changing property processes. Like, they didn't necessarily move anybody's role anywhere, but they were changing the way that those people worked and changing the way that they delivered service. And that's a very strong indication that this was top of mind in 2022. Also, most people, when you ask them what was their number one priority for 2023, they said it was either delivering a new staffing model or delivering new processes, right? So that's a much stronger indication of one thing than we've seen in any edition of 20 for 20 that we've done in the 5 years that I've been doing it. So I know that this is absolutely like a really big priority. Mm-hmm. It's just that centralization, that word, seems to be shorthand for a set of activities and initiatives that may or may not have anything to do with actually centralizing roles. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it means different things to different people, basically.
Completely.
Yeah. So what is the range that you see from what to what?
Yeah. Well, so a couple of interesting data points. So we asked the question a couple of different ways. So we asked people about which of the, we broke everything into sort of leasing, maintenance, and admin, because those are the three major buckets of activity that go on at property. When you ask people which of those things is the highest priority, it's very clear that they primarily think about leasing. Like, that's the biggest priority. Maintenance appears to be the lowest, and property admin seems to be somewhere in the middle. When you then ask the question differently, so you build from the bottom up, right? So you say, what did you do? What things did you do in 2022? What things have you planned to do in 2023? You get a very different answer. So you see that I think something like 3 out of 20 companies were actively in the process of actually centralizing their leasing function. So the highest priority thing attracted like 3 out of 10 people having actually made tangible progress on it. So there's something getting in the way of, or there's some disconnect between this intent and the thing that people are actually doing. Conversely, when you look to property admin, which was, you know, a sort of middling priority, it's clearly the area where people are making the most progress. When you talk about actually moving activities and roles off property and into central locations, far more people are taking the stuff that we normally associate with the assistant property manager, right? So just bookkeeping, processing rent, collections, late payment, all of that admin stuff. Nearly half of the companies were at some step in the process of either having done that already or in the process of taking that stuff off property. So it's like, although the big story is leasing, and the big story usually is leasing, right? Leasing just has this way of attracting people's attention in the industry. The big story about centralization, at least in public, is centralization. The really big story, in my opinion, based on what people are actually doing, is much more to do with admin. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Like, I suspect it's, I mean, admin functions just lend themselves to outsourcing generally in business. So, but the thing that I noticed is that people either conformed to one of two groups. They were either in the process of doing it or had done it, or they were not thinking about it at all. And what that sort of tells me is that the step between thinking about doing it and completing the task is way shorter than it is for leasing or for property maintenance, which I think is really interesting. And I suspect part of it is that once you start to think to any degree of seriousness about taking property admin offsite, you probably confront this idea that it was never that good of an idea to have it going on site in the first place. Like, we've developed this habit in multifamily of promoting like talented leasing agents into bookkeeping roles,
right?
Which doesn't necessarily make sense from the perspective of their career, but right. it was sort of the best way to do it. And you see really tangible progress that people are changing that model more quickly so far than they're changing the leasing part.
All right. Well, we're going to break it here. We're going to be back right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
SMART is a national multifamily research and analytics company providing market, property, and floor plan level data to track performance, evaluate competitive strategies, and identify potential investment opportunities. Their innovative web-based software and mobile application contains extensive searchable inventory of granular historical data, floor plan by floor plan rents, concessions, and availabilities for enhanced analysis and forecasting. For more information or to sign up for a free trial, go to smartapartmentdata.com.
Hi, this is Paul Marks, host and producer of the Multifamily Matters radio show. I have on the phone with me a longtime multifamily industry veteran and the author of several books, the fabulous Gary Gregory. Gary, you just released a new book called The Super Fantastic Me. I've got my copy, but tell our multifamily industry audience why this book is so important to multifamily.
Hey, thanks, Paul. The Super Fantastic Me is a guide to help people curate their best version. And why is that important? Well, all too often we go through our workday on autopilot. I was guilty of it as a community manager, checking boxes and simply doing things. Now, once I discovered there was more, that I could bring more, my outlook and career changed. My book offers a life-changing exercise to curate your word or calling card, principles, and core values. This allows you to bring greater value to the room no matter the circumstance. And having a multifamily team that knows and shows their who, why, and how will be unbeatable.
Thanks, Gary. I recommend that everyone in the multifamily tree get their copy and one for each member of their team of The Super Fantastic Me. Order it on Amazon today.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. And we're discussing the topic of multifamily operations, technology, and centralization. What's really happening in 2023? I'm Paul Marks, and joining me in the studio is a fantastic multifamily industry consultant and technology guru, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20. And before we get back into the conversation, I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, Dom, in the last segment, you made a comment, and we talked a little bit about it during the break, that that kind of was surprising to me. You said that the lowest, when in your survey, the lowest thing that you're, and I may not be stating this correctly, but maintenance was ranked the lowest in the survey. Mm-hmm. And I know that with people that we bring in as guests on the show, at least in the last, 2 years or so, that's what they want to talk about, is how much trouble they're having attracting, finding, and keeping good maintenance personnel. So, but during the break, you told me that it really is a concern with there, but they look at it maybe a little differently. Talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best way to summarize it is that maintenance is hard. Like, the idea of centralizing maintenance is sort of challenging and a little bit scary, right? So, there are some obvious things that are different about maintenance. So if I were going to try and centralize leasing between properties, every leasing agent is pretty transferable from one property to another. If I've got high rise and garden style in the same group of properties, those call for completely different maintenance skills, yeah. Right? So you've got a problem of well how do I organize that differently? But also, you've got some specific skill types in properties where there's a real risk. Like if say I had out of five properties, instead of having one person in each property who's good at HVAC, I have four and I share them, right? That sounds like a more efficient model. But you could imagine times of year where every property has an HVAC problem at the same time. And that means that now I'd be creating an emergency that I would be less well equipped to deal with. So you've got some quite important differences in the model between something like maintenance and something like leasing, which means naturally I would want to do it last out of the three, which I think the way that I interpret the answers that I got when I asked that question. The thing though that interests me about it is that because we've been doing this for years, and if you think about what doing this survey is like, you're just reading these 20 sets of answers to all these questions constantly, and you get reminded of stuff that you've seen before. Mm-hmm. And the thing that really I got reminded of this time, the way that people talk about maintenance reminds me of the conversations that I had back in 2018 and the way that people were talking about self-guided tours.
Right.
At the time, nobody was interested in self-guided tours. We were working, Donald Davidoff and I, we had been working with some some big single family operators. And what we said in the first ever edition of 20 for 20 was that this has been working really well in single family for a while, right? Self-guided tours, and the benefits are huge. Like, telling people that they can come look at a unit whenever they want to is way better than this office hours arrangement they had in multifamily. But still, in multifamily, it was all pushback. Oh, what if somebody falls over and hurts himself in the property? It was all this sort of whataboutism that just meant nobody was interested. Of course, with self-guided tours, you then get a global pandemic, and overnight it becomes culturally normal to have people show themselves around your property. But the thing that was similar in maintenance is that the companies that seem to be making headway on trying to centralize the way they do maintenance are doing so by adopting a model that looks way more like single family than multifamily. Mm. Right. So in single family, there's no on-premise staff, right? Obviously, right? So what that means is every time a work order comes in, you have some decisions to make, right? So you have to decide who's going to do this work. When is this work going to get scheduled? How much should it cost? Right, and there's really frequently a direct cost associated with doing that piece of work, because all of the resources aren't on your payroll. Multifamily, you've got a model that largely avoids those questions, right? Because we, in a 300 unit property, we have three team members in maintenance. That's what you'd call a lump of labor, right? It's just there's a capacity to do this work, and those people will just go do the work as it comes in. Right, so that's basically the way things work in multifamily. And the thing that's sort of challenging about that is that it creates this very natural inertia to not change anything about the model, right? So imagine the idea of in single family, there's a really strong incentive to get better at proactive maintenance, so that you have to do less reactive maintenance, because it generally results in lower costs. That incentive is nowhere near as strong in multifamily, right? Because if it's being done by staff that are allocated to that property, well, whether I'm fixing stuff to stop it from breaking or fixing broken stuff, it's kind of the same either way. There's no change to my costs unless something really bad happens. So you sort of realize that the model, there's lots of reasons why it's tough to break up that model, and there's really natural inertia against really making progress on it. I know this is a frustration with vendors in the maintenance space. In fact, I was just talking to one of them this morning about specifically this. But the people that are making progress on it, there are two different models that I observed. One is the model where companies are starting to look at taking turns, like unit turns, out of the purview of site maintenance and outsource it to a third party. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm going to, because turns, they have this very spiky demand, right? When you have lots of move in, moves out, so you have to do lots of turns. You also have some predictability to it, like you know when leases come up. So it lends itself to a model where, okay, I'm going to take this part of what I do and outsource it to somebody who's basically going to GC turns for me, and that then leaves me the other bits of maintenance, which are you know, I can kind of start to approach differently. That's one sort of interesting model. The other thing, though, that I find very compelling is more companies are changing the reporting lines of maintenance. So instead of having a maintenance team that reports into a community manager, you've got maintenance teams reporting into a regional head of maintenance, mm-hmm. who effectively works like a GC.
Right.
So, and that's very much the way they do it in single family, right? So somebody is getting the work orders, deciding who's doing the work, allocating the work to people, and so on. And there are a couple of really big benefits that companies get relatively quickly when they do that. One is you stop wasting money on stuff, right? So if I'm a regional maintenance head and I know that property A has this problem, but there's somebody in property B who can fix it, I stop spending money on vendors doing that. I just send the person from property B to fix it at property A, right? So you get lots and lots of benefits like that, and it sounds like they mount up very quickly. The other thing, though, is if you think about it, if you've got four or five properties together and you're pooling that maintenance team, that gives you more options in terms of specialization, right? So I can have a team of people that specialize in HVAC. I can have somebody who specializes in pool maintenance. I can have painters. Whatever it is, you can divide up the skills that you need according to the work that you need to do.
Right.
And that's inherently sort of more efficient. You can generally run maintenance with slightly fewer people, which deals with this perennial problem that it's really hard to be fully staffed in maintenance. And ultimately, it means that people have better jobs, right? It's you know, if I have a natural skill to be a supervisor, I've now got a place where I could promote that person rather than having everyone be a generalist at property, which is how it tends to work today. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you know, one of the things that you mentioned about the fact that there a lot of operators now are looking at subbing out to vendors the turns. And, you know, when I was thinking, when you said that, I started thinking about the fact that it really kind of varies by market segment. For instance, that's what student housing has done for years, because they have such a short window when the units are vacant. All their units are vacant because when the semester's over, they've got 2 weeks before the next move in. They've got to get, if they have a 300-unit property, they got to go through all 300 units, take care of everything. So they've really got an army of people waiting for that day to come in different vendors. And I guess market rate and other segments, they've just done it the conventional way of just using your own staff. But it's interesting to me that that's it, because you know, it's a timing thing for student housing. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you mentioned that I think kind of confirms something that I've felt all along is, although I'm not going into deep surveys like you are with people, I have, and I see you at these shows that we have throughout the years. And you know, when I, before the pandemic, when we would go to a exhibition and the trade show, I would talk to somebody who was walking out of a booth where there was some technology, virtual leasing, whatever it might have been, and virtual touring. And I would ask him, what do you think about it? It's, oh, I think it's great, but I think we're some years away. And then boom, the pandemic hits, and everybody is taking on that technology. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that when we get back. We're going to break it here, and we'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Control by Net provides communities with video surveillance solutions accessible 24/7 from any web browser or mobile device. Our remote guarding reduces crime in garages and mailrooms. Many top owners and managers already utilize our services and love the single sign-on feature to see all properties. As NAA and NMHC members, Control by Net only serves multifamily. Our cloud and managed video solution is consistently voted easiest to use. We meet any compliance requirements. Visit us at www.controlbynet.com or email us for a free site survey at crproperty@controlbynet.com.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. And we're discussing the topic of multifamily operations, technology, and centralization. What's really happening in 2023? I'm Paul Marks. Joining me in the studio is a fabulous multifamily industry consultant and technology guru, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. E-Conserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rev, the leasing management company. Rev is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Control by Net, providing multifamily video surveillance and remote guarding, solving your security needs. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. Balanced Asset Solutions, don't delay, call Balanced Asset Solutions today. Smart Apartment Data, the most comprehensive and up-to-date intelligence on the multifamily industry. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Dom, before the break, we were talking about maintenance, and earlier in the segment, you had mentioned something that I had seen, which is the fact that before the pandemic hit, when you would go to the conferences and people would show their new technology, There was a lot of interest, but it didn't seem like people were actually moving to do same. Then the technology hit, and everything was instantly accepted because there was no other choice. My question to you is, in your survey, have you seen since we've been coming out of the pandemic that there's a normalization back to the way things were? Or are people still using those technologies? What have you seen?
Yeah, so I think largely stuff went back to the way it was before the pandemic, right? So I think for most companies, that's probably true. There are some obvious exceptions, right? Self-guided tours are interesting because they were instantly culturally normalized by necessity, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean everybody is now predominantly doing self-guided tours. Like some companies are, like a very small number of companies are, but they're the companies that really put their mind to making that happen. For the most part, I think tours have largely gone back to where they were before the pandemic, and it's probably the minority of tours that are self-guided for most companies. The key difference with the pandemic is that it became culturally normal and acceptable to do it. The extent to which people are doing it varies a lot from one operator to the next. I mean, another good example, the kind of thing that I sense has become culturally normal is virtualizing things like, again, going back to maintenance, It seems to me that people are more culturally accepting of models like we're going to have a call center try and troubleshoot this issue with the resident, mm-hmm. right? So again, instead of if I call somebody out of hours to fix some problem in my apartment, instead of having an out of hours tech go to that apartment to solve it, the resident calls like a call center, and the call center attempts to resolve it with them. And I was actually talking to a vendor about this yesterday. It looks like something like 4 calls out of 5 turn out to be non-urgent. People are accepting of interventions like, we're going to send you the part to fix this thing, and then when it arrives, we'll talk you through how to fix it. Like that seems to be a model that lots of residents prefer to having somebody come to the apartment to fix it. I think things like that, sort of virtualized services that either augment or potentially replace on-premise ones, people are more accepting of because people just got used to stuff like that. You know, people were spending more time in their apartments during the pandemic. People were getting more stuff delivered, more services, like, et cetera. I think stuff like that is a bit more culturally normal. And again, I think stuff like that is quite an important part of the mix in terms of in terms of how something like maintenance ultimately evolves into something that works differently from the way it does now.
All right. We've got a little over 6.5 minutes left in this segment. Let's kind of shift to artificial intelligence,
yes.
or AI, as it's referred to. What role does that play in this?
A very interesting one, because it's being adopted more and more, right? So the two things that I see, last year we sort of reported AI leasing agents in particular. So this is not sort of chatbots that you have on the website. This is actual AI that kind of replaces the work that either a leasing agent or a call center would normally do. So it handles the from initial inquiry through to booking the tour, like that, the AI that handles that whole conversation nurture like process, that was becoming extremely widespread in the industry. Like I said last year, this is clearly a technology whose time has come right now. That continues to be the case. Nearly everybody is at least testing technology like that. But I also noticed that there are more and more individual applications of AI at properties, right? So it's increasingly normal to have one AI that handles calls, and mm-hmm. Like a conversational AI that handles calls, and an AI that sort of manages my nurture track for me. So if you think about the set of tasks that a leasing agent would normally have to follow, like which email am I going to have to send? How long do I wait before I take the next step? What next step should I take to get this prospect to sign a lease, right? That whole set of activities, there's our AI that handles that, and companies will have both of those applications. Another really interesting application that I see is late payments. So a few of the people that I spoke to were testing an AI that conversational AI that basically chases people who haven't paid their rent. And that's a very interesting model, because it's, first of all, that is an aspect of an assistant property manager's job that nobody
miss. Wants to do, yeah.
Right, if that goes away. But also, it's interesting. I was talking to one person who's been testing this, and she was telling me that what's interesting about it is that you get to read intent. Like, you get to understand who forgot to pay their rent and where we're going to have a problem. And you get sort of data that tells you about the things that are, tells you that about the signals that they get from the people that the AI is nurturing to get them to pay. So they're all really interesting applications of AI. But I do sense there's a bit of a pattern emerging, which is that I can see multifamily operators are looking for widgets that do tasks that they're familiar with, right? So again, going back to the original idea that if you're centralizing stuff, it's about, taking roles off property and putting them somewhere else where they can be done more efficiently. I think it's more often the case than not that people are implementing these AIs and not changing anything about their staffing models. And there's a couple of problems with that. One is, there are going to be so many vendors selling AI products for the foreseeable future, just given the level of innovation here. That adoption model, there's never going to be enough money to sustain an ecosystem of vendors, right? Because the problems keep getting smaller and smaller. Because I've defined the problem in terms of what tasks that I don't want to do can AI take off my hands for me? Well, obviously those problems are going to keep getting smaller and smaller, and the consequence of that is there's not it's not worth paying enough money for to get a piece of software to do it. So I sort of know that can't be the long-term adoption model for this. I talk in the book about a really interesting conversation that I heard with Mark Andreessen, like the Netscape founder, mm-hmm. like the investor guy, visionary. He was talking about AI, and he was saying that the question that people fail to ask themselves about AI is, what do people do? Right? People tend to think about it in terms of, what tasks do I do that I can get the AI to do for me? The right way to look at it is there are just some tasks that AI is just always going to perform better than people. You should plan on the basis that that's going to happen, and then figure out what the role is that you want your people to do, right? Mm-hmm. So you basically redefine the role that people have around AI, because that's ultimately going to find a much better equilibrium between what the people do and what AI does. So if you think about that model of collections, so two things that came out of the book, like people are testing this collections AI, and we also know that the real story of centralization is people are taking admin functions off property. Well, the opportunity that I think is extremely compelling is, all right, collections is now going to be central, and it's going to be done by AI. We need people to be the point of escalation, or to step in when a conversation has to be had. We need people to supervise what this AI is doing, but mostly this activity is going to be done by this conversational AI. Well, that's a very compelling model, because now you've created a much more efficient model. Like, it's going to work better because you're not depending on people to do all of the work. The AI is going to do what the AI is good at. And that AI now becomes really valuable to the company that's implemented it, and hence it's worth paying for, because it's improved my model. It means I don't need as many people to run that model. That's made a significant change to my business. I think people have to think about it more that way in order to get us to the point where we've got the people doing the good people stuff and the AI doing the good AI stuff.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we're going to break it here, and we're going to come back right after these messages with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Rev, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book Rev's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let Rev drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress. Stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let Rev be your long-term leasing solution. Go to RevLMC.com to find out more. That's RevLMC.com. Rev is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire Rev today.
Looking for a solution to balance your assets? Tired of wasted time managing your day-to-day bookkeeping, buggy software implementations, inaccurate financials? Or maybe you're worried about a pending audit. Would you like more time to focus on revenue-generating activities versus accounting administrative activities? Here at Balanced Asset Solutions, we are a CPA firm that specializes in property management platforms, including Yardi and Appfolio. You can reach Balanced Asset Solutions now at 619-415-6826. Go visit our website at www.balancedassetsolutions.com. Don't delay. Call Balanced Asset Solutions today.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. We're discussing the topic of multifamily operations, technology, and centralization. What's really happening in 2023? I'm Paul Marks. Joining me in the studio is a great multifamily industry consultant and technology guru, Dom Beveridge, a principal with 20 for 20. And Dom, before we had the break and you were talking in the last segment, and I had a couple of questions that came to mind. The first thing is when you're talking about, we were talking about AI, artificial intelligence, and I'm thinking to myself, well, out of all the different types of companies of the 20 that you were interviewing for the survey, where does the most interest in those types of things fall? Does it fall within the smaller operators, the larger operators, or is it just across the board? And my second question that I have is, what about third-party management companies? When you're talking about centralization, how do they account for financially, if they have different owners, applying those centralizations? I'm sure it's something that's come up, and there's an easy answer for it, but it's something that I was thinking, maybe it's a owner-operator that's able to do this more readily than a third party. What are your thoughts?
Well, the answer to that is yes. Well, yeah, so it's a really, really interesting question. So the first one, if I think about centralization, the adoption of technology, and so on, I mean, one of the things that is the clearest to me from talking to people who are at varying stages of this, the ones that are making the most tangible process are the ones that get that this is primarily about people and processes. The technology is critical, right? The mm-hmm. technology is the critical enabler of this. But all of the people who've actually made tangible progress on this say the technology part is relatively easy. The hard part is the people and process stuff, mm-hmm. right? It's hard to change people's jobs. There's risk entailed in changing a delivery model that we're really used to, and so it's the companies that tend to have the sort of longest term perspective on this. They're the companies that benefit the most from improving things like NOI. So yes, owner operators who get to keep the benefits of what they do, but also owner operators that conform to sort of long term hold, that have the best your resources to deliver your new projects, process, and so on. So it's no surprise that it tends to be people like public REITs who are at the forefront of this of these activities, and companies that effectively operate like public REITs. Mm-hmm. So yes, very high density in owner operators, larger, more forward thinking owner operators. We talked about this last year, and I mentioned it again in the paper this year. Like it's helpful to think about it in terms of two things. One, the extent to which a company owns its platform. Mm-hmm. So an owner operator largely gets to make decisions on what it does, whereas a fee manager does not. Right, a fee manager, it's a collaboration with an owner that ultimately calls the shots on these things. And the other thing is simply how close together your properties are. So you've got lots of, there are a couple of sort of 5,000 unit owner operator portfolios who took part in this year's survey. They don't have the same options open to them because their properties are they just don't have enough properties that are close right. together, right? So you have those problems that change the way that you're going to focus on this. Like the smaller operator can still take some roles offsite, but they're limited in some ways in what they can do with pooling resources. So yeah, center of the bullseye is large owner operator, forward thinking, long term hold. Those are the people that are likeliest to push on with this. It's harder to do than anything in the fee managed model. Although you certainly see people adopting the technologies. Mm-hmm. Again, we know that in multifamily there is a bit of a habit of just doing the technology bit of a project and not necessarily changing all of the other stuff. I suspect there's a certain amount of that going on in the industry right now. But fee management is interesting because it's not written in stone anywhere that you have to organize leasing the way that people conventionally organize it, right? If you think about the way that broker models work in markets like New York, you could conceive of a leasing model where a fee manager with enough density in a market is effectively changing the way that you buy leasing services. If more and more of the experience, the prospect experience, is being delivered by central resources and technology, maybe I don't need to have to charge back for one FTE at that property. Maybe there's a different model that an owner can engage leasing through. So I think there's an obvious obstacle there, but I think there are ways to there are ultimately ways to get past it.
Okay. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left before I want to transition to something else. But let's talk in these last 4 minutes before we transition about data and analytics. What role did that play in the survey?
Yeah, that was a good news story, in my opinion, because it's something that we've talked about on and off over the years with 20 for 20. We've sort of noticed that companies adopt business intelligence in particular. They adopt it in a slightly odd way in this industry. The model tends to be we go as far as we can without it, then we take whatever comes off the shelf from our PMS provider. And then once we've outgrown that, we do this really big project to go build our own platform that typically takes multiple years and costs millions of dollars. So that's quite a circuitous sort of mm-hmm. way to deliver a solution. And what we've tended to find is it means that people were never that enthused about their BI. It was like, oh yeah, we rolled out this thing, but you never really got strong evidence that people were grasping the sort of transformative capabilities of BI. But this year we saw something different, right? So if you ask people the question, tell me something you're trying to find out about your business from your BI project that you wouldn't otherwise have been able to find out, nearly everybody had at least one really good crystal clear example of something that they, some insight that they were trying to find out about their business. By the way, I didn't mention it, but like nearly everybody, like 19 out of 20 companies had done some BI project during the course of 2022. So again, this is something that, there's tons of senior hiring going on. It's clearly an area where people are doing more and more each year when we speak to them. But the thing that was interesting about the examples that people came out with was that they were all about correlation. They were all about, I want to know how this thing affects that thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I want to know about how work order completion impacts renewal rates. So they were all examples like that. And some of them were really cool. Some of them were things that I'd never sort of heard before. And they're written up in detail in the book. But the fact that it was so easy for most people to conjure up an example like that, rather than, the conversation is normally, well, we built this report and we rolled it out, we built this dashboard. It was about the insight, not about the thing that people used to get the insight out to the field. It wasn't about the mechanics. It was about the actual thing that I want to learn about my business. That's a very different answer from the ones that we've got over the years. That tells me that BI feels like it's sort of maturing in this industry. The other thing, just more on a technology side, is that several of the technologists that we spoke to who have very well resourced BI platforms told me that they have they've been doing things like cloud migrations, where one of the main drivers of the project was that they know that in the future there are going to be these enormous spikes in the amount of analysis that's being done. And analysis, particularly when they're starting to use things like AI, is very, very intensive in terms of processing. So you need, for very short periods, you need these huge increases in the amount of processing that you can do. And that means that you need a different sort of technology architecture from what people have had. But what both of those things, those sets of observations tells me is that the thing that's driving the enterprise of business intelligence at this company is the stuff that I want to find out about my business. And that's a different answer from the ones that we've got previously. And one, like I said, that tells me that I think this this whole discipline seems to be maturing in the industry.
All right. Well, I want to transition, because we could talk about this a lot longer, but I'm going to let our listeners know that when they go to the episode page on our website at multifamilyradio.com, you go to this episode page, there'll be a logo for 20 for 20. You can click on the logo and it'll take you to the 20 for 20 website. But talk a little bit about what's going on with 20 for 20, what you're working on other than the survey, and how can people get in touch with you if they want to?
Yeah, so you can get in touch with 20 for 20. It's 20FOR20, 20for20.com, simple. And that's where you can find, you'll immediately see where you can download the white paper, which obviously is free. So everyone should go download that if they haven't done so already. And you can also contact me through there. So what I mostly work on when, this survey is fascinating. It's sort of my favorite thing that I do each year. I view it as basically between the end of one year and the beginning of the next, I go back to school.
Yeah.
So right. you really, really have to think hard about what people are doing and critically why they're doing it. I do that mostly because it's just interesting, but it also enables me to do other stuff. Like I spend most of my time helping vendors with problems about how to reach a market for typically, you know, if somebody has a new product release, if somebody's having wants to find ways to break through in a crowded market where everyone's kind of saying the same thing. A really good solution to that problem is to really think hard about what's really different. Like, if you take the perspective of the owner operator, what's really different about what you do, and what's different about my business if I adopt your solution rather than somebody else's? It's really worth going through that process and sort of eliminating the things that we tend to want to talk about our products, and focusing instead on the things that we have reason to believe are really going to move the needle. And, you know, from there you get into things like, all right, well, which market segment should we really be focusing on, and what stuff should we say about our product, and how do we drive these connections? I help companies with a breadth of problems like that, and a lot of that entails writing thought leadership content. So I spend a lot of my time doing that. So I publish a lot in platforms like Units Magazine, and come on podcasts like this. Yes. that's pretty much what keeps me busy.
Well, we got about 45 seconds left. What do you, when you're talking about you work with vendors, is there a particular market segment that you find yourself working in more? Is it the technology side? Is it just across the board vendors? What do you find you're working on more?
Yeah, no, it's mostly technology. So you know, I've spent a lot of time just understanding different areas of prop tech and rent tech, and just really trying to understand why people buy it, and which models are the most compelling, and so on. So yeah, it's very much technology centric where I tend to do most of my work.
I guess that's why I always see you at the conferences.
There you go.
All right. Well, Dom, thanks so much for being here. We are going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.